Welcome to Code Red, the HIMSS podcast on information security in healthcare. Hi, I'm Rod Pihowski, Senior Director HIS at HIMSS. Is there a relationship between security and the patient experience? Do patients and their families notice security issues when they're in contact with our organization, our clinicians, our staff? And here's another question. Does it matter? Our guest on this episode is Dan Dodson. He's the President of Fortified Health Security. Dan and I had a chance to sit down at the HIMSS Global Conference in Las Vegas to discuss how to better manage the way security is perceived by customers and staff. And in this conversation, we also got into the very tricky area of demonstrating ROI on security. All that and more coming up.
Intrusion detected. Code red.
Dan Dodson is president of Fortified Health Security. Dan, thank you for joining us today on Code Red.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So today we're going to talk about a variety of topics in cyber, but we're going to get to the people element to start out. So can you share with us, and this is kind of a crossover between cyber and usability of systems and things like that too, what is cyber's relationship to the patient experience and how has that changed over the last 5 years?
It's absolutely critical that we consider them as we implement any of our cybersecurity programs. And I think that the relationship between the patient experience and cybersecurity is becoming closer together, and that gap is decreasing. And the reason is healthcare organizations are spending a lot of energy and a lot of resources to provide positive patient experiences, whether that's quality outcomes, whether that's better access to data, a better experience when they walk into your facilities. And cybersecurity and the protection that an organization can take is a component of that. And what we're finding is that as patients are acting more like consumers, they are looking at multiple different aspects of their experience within a healthcare system before they choose that system to seek care. And so if an organization is breached and their reputation is tarnished and there's a sense of insecurity on the consumer or patient's perspective, they may actually choose to seek care at a different facility. So I think it's important that health systems look at the entire experience, which includes protecting their data. And so what I'm seeing is that our CISOs and our CIOs are utilizing data and information about their programs to show other executives within the health system the importance of cybersecurity and how it ties to the patient experience. And so that's something that I think we're seeing. They're doing that by leveraging data and information. And so it's one thing to do a NIST-based assessment and kind of get a level of understanding of your security program. It's another to be able to use that data in conversation with your colleagues to talk about how it impacts the patient experience, right? And so what are some of the negative outcomes and positive outcomes that could happen if you had a more robust security program?
So how does that actually kind of start to leak out there, if you will? How do you communicate with a patient who might be engaging with an organization through some kind of a mobile device or even within the confines of the facility itself? What kind of messages are there and what kind of things can you do to help raise that level of confidence that they have in the security of the systems?
I think that it starts with training the employees of the healthcare organization and creating a culture that is aware of the sensitivity around patient data. I don't see healthcare organizations today proactively communicating to their patients and their community about don't click on emails, don't do that type of thing. I don't see them doing that. I don't necessarily think that that's maybe our role in the community. But what our role in the community is for when a patient walks into a facility or interacts with one of our caregivers, that they are not leaving their laptops open, using their badges, not allowing people to follow them in, not sharing passwords. You don't want the patients. I think consumers are wise enough now. If we walk into a nursing station and there's a bunch of sticky notes with passwords, those are some of the little nuances that I think will send the wrong message to the patients. And I think those are things that we're seeing a lot less of, if that makes sense. So it's less of an outbound communication and more of a culture within the health system that's important.
Right. And there are little signals that we get used to after a while once we start to habituate this concept of we're all responsible for security. And
exactly.
I think you start to notice those signs.
Absolutely.
When you walk into a place and you see what's going on.
Exactly.
So this is a great segue into the next question I'd had for you then, which is what can patients do to be more vigilant about protecting their health data?
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. And this is more, I would say, general cyber hygiene that just probably manifests in the way that it may engage with the health system, but not sharing your passwords with your colleagues, not having the same passwords for everything, making sure that you don't leave your patient portal open if that's what you're using. Don't leave insurance information. Don't exchange those with friends. Typical cyber hygiene. Most importantly, don't click on links, right? The biggest thing that any individual can do to help protect themselves or the health system is make sure that you don't get phished. Watch out and be cognizant of people sending you emails from sources that may not be the source that they look like. That's kind of the most important thing.
Well, so, and this is the tough part, though. For the past 20 years, we've all been trained to click. Everything right. is link-based. Yep. You see a link and we go chasing after that link. Yep. Click, click, click.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And people, that's the main metric that a lot of our organizations use to measure how successful was a campaign or whatever. Yep. Click, click, click. So can you give us just a quick rundown or a reminder again of any red flags that I might say, this isn't one of the clicks I should go chasing it?
Yeah, I think one of the easiest things to look at is if you have an email or something come to you that you weren't expecting, right? I think that should be the first red flag. I got one yesterday that looked like a DocuSign document from my CFO. Well, I certainly wasn't expecting to sign anything yesterday. So immediately that was a red flag. So just kind of condition yourself to be thinking about, was I really expecting this person to communicate with me? Whether that was my bank, whether that was my health facility, that my patient portal, et cetera, is the first thing. And then the second thing is look at the address. So oftentimes it will say, they're sophisticated attacks now, they'll say the name in the message that they're sending it to you, like the from, if you will. It'll have their name. But if you actually look at the email address, it will not be their accurate email address. So that's the first kind of cue. You open your Gmail or you're interfacing with, you know, typically as you scroll through it, you can see that information. So those were the two things I would say, think about. Be cognizant and cautious if you were not expecting an email from that person. If it's kind of out of the blue, give that some thought. Pick up the phone and call them maybe. I know people don't know how to do that anymore. Maybe send them a text. But
call? What does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then look at the email address. I think those are the two things that I would say out of the gate to be looking for.
And I'm glad you brought that up because while to some of our listeners, this might sound like old hat, don't click, yep. be aware of phishing. That's the number one way that malware gets into a system is through email and yep. phishing attempts. And I also wanted to touch base with you on the example that you brought up. They're even upping the game on that now. And for example, instead of just an email, what they're doing is you might get a spoofed phone call that says, I need you to sign something. Yep. And so there's a much more sophisticated, multi-pronged yep. attack going on here, and you yep. just have to be aware of that. And it really means you need good communications within your organization.
Yep. Yeah, and I would also say, think about the ask in the email. Sophisticated organizations, health systems, payers, patient portals, et cetera, they shouldn't be asking for hypersensitive information, social security numbers, those types of things. I think the market, which is a positive, has moved beyond that. And so be careful with the information request and make sure that you are validating the source before you do that.
Nice. So again, we're talking about awareness is like step number one. Yep. And could you give our listeners an idea of maybe a couple different steps, some important steps, if an organization is looking to change its culture and the attitude towards cybersecurity, what would be the first two or three things that you would advise?
The first one is it's a commitment. Right. I think the last thing that we can do for our employees to champion change is to roll out a program that we're not committed to and that's inconsistent. I think that's going to send a bad message and that will actually do more harm than good. Checking a box on culture change as it relates to phishing and employee experiences, which parlay into patient experiences is not going to be good. So first of all, I'd say commit to the program. And secondly is there are a lot of very effective and efficient and cost effective solutions for phishing. So if your organization is not doing monthly, quarterly phishing campaigns in the organization, I think you're doing yourself a big disservice. These are self-run programs that give immediate remediation to the end user if they click on a link. What we're seeing is health systems take that a step further and actually put some policies in place that require more heavy remediation. So I'll give you an example. There's a health system out there that has a three-strike policy. So they run a monthly phishing campaign every single month for all of their employees, executives, through doctors, everybody that is in the AD, so to speak. And if you get phished, the first time you do that, you get immediately remediated through software. The second time you do that, your supervisor is alerted. The third time, it's a terminable offense. Now, the challenge is most of the people that click on it are either an IT or a doctor or executive. So are you really committed to the program? So see my first point. I don't think lots of people are there yet. And maybe that's an extreme, but what can your organization culturally and politically afford to implement? Because where that system or process would break down is where a high profile person or critical staff member gets to step number three. If you don't execute the program that was laid out, no one will trust the program anymore.
Right.
So understand your organization's ability to commit to whatever it is that you want to do, and then be consistent in how you do it.
And that's why it's important to make sure that everyone in the organization up through the top gets this, because if you let the CEO get away with it, to your point, it's not an equal distribution of punishment.
Exactly.
So that's kind of a nice transition into the next thing I'd like to talk about. And this is a question that we've been hearing much more, and this came up in our cybersecurity forum on Monday before the conference actually started. We're at HIMSS 18 right now. And this is the question around, how do you frame the costs for effective cybersecurity versus the benefits? What kind of metrics matter when you're talking to C-suite members? How does an organization do the ROI? This is the question we're hearing. What's the ROI on doing this? Do I need to demonstrate an ROI, or is it something that should just be considered part of doing business? Is it a build-in, or is it something I need to prove benefit for in order to implement?
I think as an industry, not only unique to healthcare, but in multiple verticals, this is a big challenge. How do I tie ROI to my capital and operating requests? Because we're competing against a new CT machine, a patient experience initiative, other, frankly, critical initiatives within the health organization. And so I think it's important to look at it in a couple of ways. Number one, this is to some degree managing risk. And I think it's important that an organization, as they look at deploying capital in cybersecurity, they're going to have to accept risk in some areas and maybe forego risk or make investments in other areas. So getting a tangible ROI on investing in a phishing program or rolling out a new technology can sometimes be challenging, quite frankly. We find that organizations that procure cyber insurance, which is a recommendation today, those insurance binders contain requirements that the organization must do in order for the policy to be in force. And what we found is one way to measure ROI is if you work with your broker and you produce evidence of your security program, you can actually increase, and we have clients doing this today, the amount of coverage you have and lower your premium. So that's a way to kind of tie dollars. But the other important, because remember this is managing risk, element is if your broker and ultimately your insurance company has given you additional premium and validated, in a sense, portions of your security program, in the event that you have an event, they're more likely to pay and you're more likely to not have what some health systems have happened, and this is public news. Once it happens, it goes through claim review and there's been a big kind of public case around a clawback. You're going to avoid that. So when you think about that from an ROI, it's like, okay, I'm paying less for insurance premium. I'm getting more coverage, which is what I can tie dollars to. And then in the event that I have a breach, the likelihood of them paying is higher because through that process, they've essentially validated what it is that I've done. So that's an area that I think you can kind of calculate in ROI. The other thing that I would say is, and not necessarily as much about ROI, but where we see health systems fail is the operating costs associated with these technologies. So these security technologies that we're implementing are very sophisticated and require experts to be able to manage them. And what we find is we have a capital budget for the new DLP, advanced threat, whatever it is that we're buying, and we haven't considered who's going to operate this thing. Because these technologies have to work in concert with the technologies you already have, and you have to make sure that you're writing the rules and you're making sure that they're actually doing and delivering the value that you perceived when you first purchased it. So I would encourage health systems to think about how are we going to operationalize these technologies and how are we going to make sure that our perceived value and actual value are equal or more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does, absolutely. And I think it's important to note, too, that a one-time risk assessment does not mean your job is done. Risk is a continuous process, yep. And you're talking about operationalizing this and finding the right people and the expertise, and this needs to be continuously monitored and updated. Yep. And I like this idea of a bigger investment in the organization up front in order to reduce risk and in partnership with your cybersecurity insurance.
Yep. Yep. And then the other thing that I would say around ROI, and this is less around dollars, but when we're at the table with our executives talking about budget and talking about risk, I think it's important to use data to show how the prior investments have impacted your security posture over time. I'll give you a great example. So let's say that you implement technology around vulnerability scanning and you're trying to drive a better patching program in your organization, which requires downtime, which nobody likes. And there's all kinds of challenges around that culturally. If we can show them by using data that we had, using round numbers, would likely be more than this, but 100 vulnerabilities last month, we implemented this program, now we have 80, now we have 70, oh, went back up to 80, now it's 60. And you can show them over time that, listen, the amount of money and the process and the downtime culturally that I'm asking you to do is actually decreasing our surface area of attack. And then tie it to something that's meaningful to them. So how do we tie real-world experiences that our colleagues know about and tie it to the type of investments and areas that we're trying to look to invest in?
And attack surfaces are not finite. They are continuing to grow exponentially as patients get more involved. We bring in other devices and all this connectivity grows. So it's a never-ending process and very much needs to be actively managed, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's hard because cybersecurity is a journey, right? There's no HIPAA stamp. There's no, I'm HIPAA compliant. You're not going to do that. The OCR is not going to come in and say, oh, you checked this box, you're great. They're going to want to see process improvement. They're going to want to see your program developing over time as your organizations change and as your needs change and as threats increase over time.
Let's shift a little bit to what are some of the big vulnerabilities and pain points that are still being used? What's the most common thing that is affecting organizations? What could everybody stand to take another review of before they feel a little more confident?
Yeah, I would say two areas. One we've touched on earlier, which is employee education, the cultural elements around phishing, and making sure that we have a good, consistent, and quality program around our employee education. The second is patching. We see health systems all over the country that are really excited about advanced technologies. And when I ask them about their patching program, it's not good. And if somebody gets in your environment, they're going to exploit those vulnerabilities, right? That was the WannaCry. Those were some of the attacks that we saw in 2017. We expect to see more of those next year. Patch. And that is a real challenge for all of our organizations because it requires downtime. Nobody likes that. But the other thing that I will tell you is what we find is you need a commitment to the patching program all the way down to the person that's hitting the button to execute the patch. Because what we find is we implemented all these EMRs, we spent all this capitalization, and we have a legacy infrastructure that it's running on. So part of the challenge that we don't patch is it going to come back up, right? So we have to be committed that, hey, we're going to do this, understanding that there may be some adverse effects that we don't know about. And so that's one of the preventative challenges that as to why people aren't patching, right? I've never met a CIO or CISO that says, hey, look, we don't need to patch. They all know they need to do it. It's just a matter of championing it. And I think that for those organizations that aren't doing that, they're putting themselves at risk in a big way. I would start focusing there before I started spending exorbitant amounts of money on additional technology solutions, quite frankly.
And patching, of course, requires, you know, from everything you just said, it sounds to me, you need a good relationship with all of your vendors and you need to understand what their patching policies are. And what does that do to your risk profile when you do a patch? It sounds like you're doing the right thing, but now is your risk assessment somehow modified? Is it less predictable than it was yesterday?
Yeah, exactly. And I think using, back to my earlier comment about using data, you know, how do we show our colleagues and show the performance of our program over time? You're going to commit to allow us for downtime and allow us to execute patches and we're going to commit to it. Well, how has that lowered my surface area for attack or my vulnerabilities over time? And is it an effective program or not? And then we got to start holding these third parties accountable. We have a program around managing third party risk. And when I talk to people about this, what I tell them is, listen, If you want to really understand the security posture of the organizations that you're doing business with, you have to be willing to make a change. So the outsourced billing radiology group, that is a small run shop that your radiologists love. Oh, by the way, those are the folks that make you a lot of money. If you really want to understand the security posture of that, what happens if you find information you don't like? Are you really going to look at those radiologists and tell them to switch billing companies? Maybe, maybe not. So those are some of the real life challenges that we see as it looks to third party risk and those types of things that we're exchanging data with. It's a big challenge. And when we often find time, people love the idea. And then I always tell them, listen, if you're not willing to make change, then let's take those dollars and allocate them somewhere else where we can actually have a material impact on your security program.
It's really about partnerships.
Yep.
You used the phrase in the next year. And so my last question will be, would you like to take a shot at kind of guessing what we're going to see in the next year or two?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. One, I would say that, and we actually released this in our Horizon report, 2018 Horizon report, where we talk about some of the trends that we look at. Unfortunately, I think breaches are going to continue to increase. I think we're going to see, according to the OCR reported breaches of 500 records or more, I think we're probably going to see a 10 to 15% increase in breaches. I think that providers will continue to be the most targeted and attacked segment of healthcare. I think that we're going to see a lot of energy and a lot of investments around connected medical device and IoT. That represents a significant vulnerability as an industry for us. The number of devices is increasing and our ability to secure them has natural challenges. We see a lot of energy around that. And then my hope is that we're going to see, as kind of a public policy perspective, I think we need to make steps more towards a national framework of assessment. When I talk to healthcare organizations, there's some really solid frameworks out there, NIST, HITRUST, et cetera. But when they interact with different parties, we're spending a lot of time redoing assessments and redoing paperwork. And I often get the question, is that really adding value to my security program, right? So how do we as an industry take steps in 2018 to come up with a agreed upon framework for these healthcare organizations such that they can do one and then get on that path to journey and satisfy the requirements of the relationships that they have with maybe other parties? I think it's a good thing that we could be focused on.
Well, Dan Dodson is president, Fortified Health Security. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today on Code Red. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Commitment is critical to a successful security program, and that commitment isn't just to the technology and processes. The human component is especially important, whether you want your customers to have confidence in your organization's ability to protect their data, or whether you need to persuade leadership that the benefits of a solid security plan outweigh the costs. Thanks again to our guest, Dan Dodson, president of Fortified Health Security. Also, thanks to our staff for their roles in making Code Red happen. Adam Baser is my co-producer, and Kelly Lippitt is the show's guest relations manager. Code Red is a copyrighted production of HIMSS. HIMSS is a global voice, advisor, and thought leader of health transformation through health information and technology, with a unique breadth and depth of expertise and capabilities to improve the quality, safety, and efficiency of health, healthcare, and care outcomes. HIMSS designs and leverages key data assets, predictive models, and tools to advise global leaders, stakeholders, and influencers of best practices in health information and technology so they have the right information at the point of decision. HIMSS drives innovative, forward-thinking around best uses of information and technology in support of better connected care, improved population health, and low cost of care. I'm Rod Pihowski. See you next time on Code Red.
Intrusion detected. Code Red.